You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
We're continuing, coffee breath. We're continuing our Mark series. This is really bad. I brushed my teeth this morning, I promise. We're continuing our Mark series, and we're on week three here as we go through it. Okay, excuse me for a moment. I love coffee, but you know how it works. When I was in high school, we had a chemistry teacher, and I'm not going to tell you his name in case you know him. But it was funny when we discussed who had what classes. If you found out that you had this particular teacher, the upperclassman would always be like, "Oh yeah, he's the bad breath guy." Like that was the first thing. It wasn't about what you learned in chemistry. Of course, not that anybody in high school ever talks about what they learned. But that was the first thing you find out, like, about his breath. And it was true. He just had this nasty coffee breath that just seemed to not quit. And you felt like as a student, you'd want to give them a breath mint, but that would seem rather inappropriate. So because that's rather inappropriate, I've given all of you breath mints. And so if you sit on your chair somewhere right around you, you should have a little breath mint for you because your breath stinks. And we can kick the house lights on here if you can't find it. But why don't you grab that breath mint? It is peppermint. If you have some sort of peppermint allergy, please don't lick it or stick it up your nose. But if you thought about, I mean, breath mints are really kind of cool. If they're the good kind. Like now, these are brand name, so they're not like those little things that your grandma used to have that like burned your throat and then made you smell worse than you did before. But a breath mint is such an interesting thing because you put the breath mint in, and if you're sucking on it or chewing on it, like your throat and your mouth have this fresh smell. And if it's a good breath mint, high quality, when the breath mint is gone, the fresh smell is still there, right? And if it's not, you know, it's a cheap breath mint. But a good breath mint will make your breath fresh longer and longer, like Mentos. You know, remember the Mentos commercials back in like the 90s where the guys would, nobody even remembers this, where they'd be like these really awkward situations and they're like, "You just stole my car." And then he's like, "Have a Mentos." "Oh, well, in that case, it's all right." It's just random stuff like, "You just tripped my grandma." Mentos, the fresh maker. Oh, well, then, like, Google it sometime, like YouTube. I'm sure they're online, the old Mentos commercials. But they're like these horrible things that people would go through, and then but they would offer them a Mentos at the end. They're like, "Oh, shucks, okay." But breath mints. Anyway, breath mints are an interesting thing because you chew on them, you suck on them, and then once they are long gone, they are still leaving the refreshing taste in your mouth. I mean, you know, and I don't know what your morning routine is. Hopefully it involves a toothbrush at some point. But, you know, if your morning routine is just the breath mint, again, 9 out of 10 dentists recommend that that is not the way you do it. And I don't know what was up with the last guy. But the important thing is that, you know, you put a breath mint in and it refreshes things. Like right now, you would not have a problem talking to me. And if you're one of these people or, you know, and it's always this awkward stuff in the back and we're trying to whisper things to each other. So we're like, "Hi, I had coffee. What did you have?" "Oh, well, I had a burnt bagel with onion cream cheese on it." You know, I mean, we don't say that, but you're like, "Oh, I knew that right away." And if you know someone's like a close talker and you're like, "Hi, please use a breath mint." But the thing about breath mints, and why am I talking about breath mints? There's actually a point to this, if you hadn't figured that out now. But breath mints, once they are gone and dissolved, they are still keeping your breath fresh. And they can take something that's nasty and turn it into something good. I mean, you can go to Taco Bell which you should go to Taco Bell. Come on. See, I'm allowed to talk about, I don't know, the undisclosed fast food location restaurant in town. But, you know, you could eat all sorts of Taco Bell yumminess because everything at Taco Bell is yumminess. And then, you know, and if you know anything about Taco Bell, aside, there's other factors as well that are going into what happens after Taco Bell. But let's focus on your mouth. But when you're done at Taco Bell, you're like, there's this, like, you know how you can, like, taste dinner? And you can kind of smell it, and it's there. And then, you know, if you, like, belch, then you're like, oh, yeah, burrito. But you put a breath mint on that thing, and it takes that nasty, yucky thing, and, oh, it broke in half. And now I've got two pieces to worry about. Does anyone here know, what's that, the Heimlich maneuver? Okay, good. We got one person back there. Careful, it might be a little hard to lift. What was I talking about? Breath mints. Okay, so it will take the nastiness and clean it away. I had some point there. I forget what it was. But you know, when it's long gone, it's still fresh. And you ready for this? Jesus is like a breath mint. What? Now, Jesus is like a permanent breath mint. He's like the Altoid from heaven. He, if he is in our lives, once we are long gone, the fresh flavor of Jesus will last. If Jesus is living through us, our interaction with other people, once we're dead, once we're gone, once we've moved away, once we've left the country, whatever, if Jesus is living through us, that fresh taste, that refreshing scent, is that what you, is breath scented, will last for eternity. And so this week, as we continue the series called Marked, we're looking at different kinds of marks. And again, some are positive, some are negative. The very first week, we talked about the marks in our past and the negative things that affect us, and how God is not limited by the marks in your past, and he can overcome them. And then last week, we talked in kind of a different way, and the fact that we are marked by God as righteous. If we've trusted Jesus, our Savior, we have been declared righteous, like a judge with a gavel saying, you have been made right with God. We talked about justification. It's a big fancy theological word we looked at last week. And so this week, I want to kind of look at Mark at a whole different angle, kind of look at it from a different perspective. And this is the idea of making your mark. Because for most of you in this room, you know, you have probably at some point, if not frequently, thought about your legacy. Thought about, what are you going to leave behind? What are you going to be known for? And certainly, if you've encountered death in the last few months or year, you know, if you've had a loved one die or a friend pass away, you know, suddenly that becomes all the more real. Because, you know, what are people going to know you for? Kind of the idea of, you know, what are people going to say at your funeral? What are they going to, and you've heard maybe this idea of the tombstone testimony. Like, what are people going to put on your tombstone? What are you going to be known for? Here lies Bob. He's dead. Couldn't think of anything good to say about him, so we just said that. You know, or something like, you know, and you hear this. And again, we understand that death is a hard thing. Death is a painful thing, and I'm not trying to mock it. But in a funeral memorial service setting, we try to find the good things to say. We try to say the nice things because we don't want to be negative. And you know, there are people that you may know. Maybe it was that uncle. Maybe it was, you know, sweet granny who wasn't so sweet. She was just mad and mean that, you know, everybody gets together and, you know, behind closed doors, everybody talks about, yeah, granny was so mean. But what are we going to say at the funeral? I don't know. She had a nice house. You know, we'll come up with nice things. And so we try to find the positive things. But I want you to understand that nothing that you leave behind, nothing that anybody leaves behind is going to last unless what you leave behind is Jesus. That's what's going to matter. And so you can spend your life and work as hard as you can in making a name for yourself and making sure that your legacy is great and making sure that you've got lots of retirement or inheritance left for your kids or teach your kids. And we'll get into some of this stuff later. But unless Jesus is coming out of you, there's not going to be anything that's going to last. And so the point this week that I want you to get is that the mark that you leave for the future will be Jesus in you. If you want to make a difference for the future, and whether that future is for your children, whether that is for your spouse, for your friends that will be left behind, whether that's for just like all of eternity, I want to be known as the winningest football coach of all time. I want to be known as a Super Bowl winning championship, winning coach, or I want to be known as, you know, all of these things that we want to be known as won't last. But if you want to leave a mark that will last forever, it will be Jesus through you. It will be Jesus in you. So let's talk about this. Let's look at this a little bit more. You know, Jesus is like the breath mint. When it's gone, he continues. He's like the flavor of the breath mint. He's the, what do they call that in those ones that have the core of confidence? Did anybody ever buy those breath mints? I don't know what brand they are, but they've got the core of confidence, which is like sparklies in the middle. If it's sparkly, it must be good. So, but Jesus is like that flavor. Once the mint is long gone, if the flavor is Jesus, it's going to last for eternity. The mark you leave for the future, if you want to make a difference eternally that's going to last, it's going to be Jesus in you. Let's look at a passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And follow me with this, because if you grew up in church, you might see this and be like, what is he talking about? And that's okay. If you haven't grown up in church, welcome. Fresh, clean slate as we look at this, as we look at this passage. But we're looking at 1 Corinthians, which is a letter written by a guy named Paul to a church in Corinth. And he was talking about some different problems in the church. 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians were two letters that he wrote. And there were lots of issues with the church. And so in these letters, he was talking to them, writing them, saying, look, guys, here's some things you need to work on. And so this is what he says in chapter 3 of 1 Corinthians. He says, brothers and sisters, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit, but as people who are still worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere human beings? What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord had assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. Now let's look at this. Now again, you need to understand as we get into this passage is that Paul is writing this. And Paul is talking about Paul as he writes this. This is important because it's not just some guy on the outside being like, yeah, that Paul guy's a jerk. And Apollos can't even beat Rocky in a fight. I guess that was just Apollo, wasn't it? He's not. Was it Apollo? Apollo Creed? Yeah. Okay. That wasn't Mr. T, though. That was a different guy. Okay. Focus. So he's not just some guy from the outside writing and saying, you know, I don't like these guys anyway, so stop following them. He is writing about himself. So that's important to understand. But I want to talk about this idea of lasting freshness, of this breath freshening scent that will go on and on and on. And that is kind of what Paul is talking about here, this idea of what is going to last, what is going to matter, not just for the next generation, but for generations to come. For the stories that are going to be shared and grown and worked on from for the next generation and how they pass it on and on. This idea of lasting freshness. The first thing we need to understand is that faith, and this is what he's writing in here, faith in people is misplaced. Faith in people is misplaced. So if we are hoping that our legacy is based in who we are, in what we have done, Paul is saying that's the wrong place to put it. It is misplaced. And misplaced is probably a very gentle word because Paul gets a little bit more specific. I want you to look here at 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 to 4. Look at the words that are highlighted. Look at how Paul, and again, if you're not from church, these aren't words that might mean as much to you. But if you grew up in church or even have been around for a while, these words in red, they're not positive words. They wouldn't help his ego or his self-esteem. Okay, these are some negative things that Paul is talking to the church. He says, brothers and sisters, first of all, he says, I couldn't address you as people who live by the Spirit, which is just a big fancy word of saying, you're not even following Jesus. He says, I couldn't address you as people of the Spirit, but people who are still worldly. And worldly, if you look at the Bible, worldly is like, it's the opposite. The word actually means fleshly. It comes from a word that has to do with flesh, with sin, with like inappropriate sex. Like it's just a word that is negative. And he says, you are worldly. He's talking to a church. And here's the interesting thing. The word I could not, and then later he says, you are not ready down there in the second bottom of the first paragraph. That word there is like he says, the word is dynamite. It's this idea of power, of being able. We get the word dynamite from it. He says, I wasn't even able to address you as people that live by the Spirit. I wasn't able to talk to you about people that are following God because you're worldly. You are the opposite of what God wants from his church. He says, you're infants. He says, you're just a bunch of babies. You're a bunch of a little baby whiners. He says you're infants in Christ. And that's a cool word. Just I know I don't want to make you like the Bible was originally written. The New Testament was written in Greek. And so there's words that we translate to English. And there were brilliant people that translated it. So they know what they're talking about. But just so you know, the word infant literally means no word. And it's a word that when you see the Bible talk about infants or children, the word is no word. They can't speak. So he says, you're just like little babies that can't even talk. He says, I gave you milk, not solid food. I wanted to talk to you about big, deep things, but I had to give you milk like a little baby, not solid food, because you were not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not able. You are not ready. You can't take what I've got to give because you are just being little worldly, as he goes on there, you are still worldly, little babies. So what does that mean? Well, he says, for since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, since that you're fighting, he says, aren't you still worldly? He says, the reason I'm calling you babies, the reason I'm calling you infants, the reason I'm saying that you're worldly and not being led by God, and again, these are negative, negative things. You would be offended if I said that to you. If you came and said, Sean, can we talk? I'm like, you're just worldly. And, you know, sometimes you have to say those things. But Paul wasn't being polite. He was saying, you guys are still worldly. There's jealousy among you. He goes on and says, are you not acting like mere humans? And what he's saying here is not that, like, why aren't you acting like robots or superheroes or something like that? But the idea is that this mere humans, he says, you're acting like people that haven't even been saved by Jesus. You're acting like people that are still going to hell. You have trusted Jesus. You have believed him on faith. You have been justified, as we talked about last week. But you're acting like that didn't even count. You're acting like it didn't even change you. You're just like mere humans. You're just like sinners going to hell. He says, they're saying, well, what does that mean? Well, when one says, I follow Paul, he's talking about himself. When someone is saying, I'm following Paul, and another says, I follow Apollos, he says, aren't you mere human beings? Aren't you just being sinful people that don't even care about Jesus? So he is saying pretty negative things built in this concept of following Paul. Because what was going on is the church, Paul was the one that planted the church. He started the church in Corinth. He went there, shared the message of Christ, started a church and said, here, guys, this is what it's all about. This is what Jesus has done for you. Let's live as a church together. And so the people came together. I mean, very similar to what MC3 is. You know, people came together, gathered in worship. They shared time, spent time in community. They spent time caring for the needs of other people around them. They were a church, and he started that. Then a little bit later, Paul kind of moved on, and he was a missionary. He was planting other churches. And Apollos came in, and he came in, and he helped them grow. And he was sharing with them about Jesus, helped them learn more about what Jesus meant, learn more about how the Messiah changed their lives, and basically was teaching them and discipling them so that they would be more and more like Jesus. And so now Paul's writing back to these people saying, look, guys, man, you've missed it. Because you're putting your faith in Paul. You're putting your faith in me. Now, and this is important. Because if he's a human being, in a good way, not in a natural, he's human, like many of us are, we want our name to be great. You know, I think deep down, I don't really care about myself. No, you do. And it's not necessarily that it's right. But this was Paul's opportunity to be like, oh, don't follow Apollos. Follow me. Because I'm Paul, dude. I wrote the New Testament. Apollos, he's in there like three times. Jesus met me on a road and I was blind and now I see. You want to follow someone? I am the man to follow. But he didn't. He said, you guys are so messed up because you think that your faith, you think that these people are the ones that you can cling to. And you're fighting about it. You're like, oh, we're sitting on this side because we're the Paul side. Oh, I don't like the Paul side. We're the Apollos side. And Paul's saying, y'all both are dumb. You're both idiots. Because it's not about Paul and it's not about Apollos. You're just being sinful people by putting your faith in people, in human beings. It's misplaced. And the idea here is that, you know, are you hoping that someone puts their faith in you? Are you hoping that when I'm gone, I followed Sean, I followed Eric, I followed John, I followed Bill, Carla? Like, is that what we're hoping for? That our name lives on? Because Paul is saying, that just makes you a godless, worldly person. Because it's not about the people. And we'll get to that in a second. He said this, and the second thing that he mentions here is that our role as people is misunderstood. He said, maybe we can explain this a little bit. Maybe we can help you guys, church in Corinth, understand why following Paul and following Apollos, why that's so wrong. He says, because you need to understand who we are as people. And this is what he says in verse 5. He says, what, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Again, he's talking about himself. Who am I? Only servants. And that's what the word is, that diakonos, deacon, is sometimes translated the same word. We are just servants. We are just slaves. We are just the ones that do the bidding of the master through whom you came to believe, and the Lord has assigned to each his task. What, after all, is Apollos? What is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe. He gets it. He's like, you guys, I understand. You know, these people have made a huge impact on your life. I mean, I love when we had a baptism last week and five more people baptized. And it's awesome seeing how God is changing lives. And when I meet with the people that are being baptized, as we do at MC3, you know, I say, is there someone that was a spiritual influence in your life that you would like to be a part of baptizing you? Not that it changes anything. Not that it makes them more holy or less holy or gets them closer to God or anything. But just sort of a way to say, you know, thanks, you've meant a lot. And one of my favorite things is just, it's kind of weird and twisted, I guess, but watching the angst that people have going like, oh, but that person meant a lot to me. Well, and that person meant, okay, well, what about, you know, and there's a lot of thinking. That's cool. I think it's a good thing. But what he's saying, Paul is saying here, is that it's not a bad thing that someone has been a spiritual influence in your life. You came to believe through them. But they were servants and did what the Lord has assigned them to do. And that's just it. That's it. And that's who we are. As human beings, we have not accomplished, you have not done anything of significance in anybody's life on your own. If you've made a difference in someone's life, it is because of God working through you. It's because of the Jesus that's in you that you're leaving behind. Because you're melting away, but the freshness of Jesus is what's going to last. So you need to understand that. Well, what about? I taught them how to mow the lawn. That's great. That's what they're going to say at your funeral. Ah, I learned how to mow the lawn. What would we have done without it? Man, we could all be drowning in our grass right now. I mean, and so understand that there's things that we can teach people, but if it's going to last, if it's going to make a difference, We need to understand that the only reason we're making a difference, the only reason you are making a difference in the life of someone else, the only reason you're making a difference in the life of your children, the only reason you're making a difference in the life of the ministry teams you're serving on, or in your prime group, or in your job, in your neighborhood, the only reason that you are making a difference is because you are being obedient to the Master, to the Lord, which Lord means Master. That's why we use that word. You're being obedient to the Lord to do what He has told you to do. And think about it. Like, you know, we don't have this concept too much, but you know, the idea of a servant. You have a server that comes to your table to take your food order. You know, their job isn't to befriend you, although some of them do that. And that weirds me out. I'm a little like, don't sit down next to me and get in my face and talk about my food. That's just me. And I know that's like personal and fun and all that stuff. But you know, your job is to bring my food. And I don't mean that in a cold, heartless, like I'm a jerk when I have someone serve me. But you know, like, we're not to be buddies. We're not, our job isn't for them to like, well, can I tell you about how to change the oil in a 1973 Chevy? No. Bring my food. Like, your job is to be the servant. And when they bring the food out, they're not coming and saying, look what I have prepared for you. No, you didn't. You just brought it from the kitchen. Somebody else prepared it for me. But your job was just a servant. You're just the one that is bringing it on behalf. You're doing what you were told to do. And that is who we are as humans. And so if we're placing our faith in people, we're placing it in the person that hasn't, you know, we're saying, thank you so much. You are the best server ever. This food is delicious. And of course, that's the unfortunate part, is that who gets the bad tip when the food isn't good? But we understand that their job is to be the servant. And that's what we are. There's nothing about us. There's nothing about you. There's nothing about me. I joke on purpose about being the pastor. And I was just talking about this with someone the other day. Not because I don't respect the position that God has put me in. I think it's a huge blessing and humbling and everything. But because I don't want you to put me on the pedestal. I'm just a servant. I'm not any better than you, and you're not any better than anyone else. We are all merely servants. The one that's better is the Master. So that's why Paul was saying, you are so worldly, you are so immature, because you're placing your faith in people, and people aren't going to last. People aren't even the ones doing it. It is Jesus. It is God that is doing it through them. And then so the third thing that he says here is that God is the difference maker. God is the trump card. God is the one that takes all this, which is kind of cool, kind of not cool, sometimes marked up and messy and ugly, and sometimes really on fire, and takes that. He takes that, and he's the one that does something with it. And that's what he says in verses 6 to 7. He says, I planted the seed. I was there. I started this church. I love this church. I said, I shared Christ with the people in Corinth, and they came together. And I can speak from a first-person perspective. I get that. Nobody wants to see their church fall apart that they started. Apollos came along and watered it. That planted church. And now he's kind of jumping to the imagery of vegetation, I guess you could say, and saying, you know, that it was planted. Apollos watered it, and right now the kids upstairs in Ignition, they're learning the exact same things. That's what we do here at MC3, that your kids learn the same things so you can have meaningful conversations with your kids. But they're up there right now planting seeds, putting them in a pot, watering them, and then they're going to be asked to make it grow. And unless it happens, I'll let you know. I don't think it will, because they can't make it grow. God is the one that grows it, and that's what he's saying. God has been making it grow. And the verse you're going to be working on this week with your kids in the ATU pack, which they're learning up there, is this. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything. They're nothing. Do you get that? He's not saying they had a pretty good contribution. If it wasn't for them, God would never have been able to do it. No, they're nothing. Neither is the one who plants nor the one who waters. Neither of them is anything, but only God who makes things grow. So if you want to make a difference, if you want to leave your mark on the world, I got bad news for you. You can't. The only mark that you can leave is Jesus through you. Because God is the difference maker. God is the one that is changing hearts. God is the one that transforms lives. God is the one that can bring that child of yours that has been walking away from Christ back to Christ. And some of you have seen that. God is the one that can take that parent that says, I don't want anything to do with church, and suddenly their lives are changed. God is the one that can take that marriage and bring it back together. God is the one that can take that sickness and heal it. It is God. It's not about anything that we do. God is the difference maker. And so if we want to make a difference, point people to Him, because you're going to be gone. You're going to be dissolved. And you might be dissolved. And if you have the core of confidence, if you are a good, fresh maker, you're going to leave Jesus, the freshness that will last and last and last. But if it's about you, that breath mint's going to be gone and it's just going to be nasty stink again. Because you have nothing to offer, because you are the servant. He is the master. So the mark that you leave for the future will be Jesus in you. If you want to make a difference, if you want to leave something behind, if you want people to remember you, let them remember Jesus through you. I remember talking about this at the Prime Group meeting way back at the beginning of the year, and you know, we somehow got into the discussion of what do we want people to remember us for. And I don't say this to sound proud or awesome, but I just want people to remember Jesus because of me. I'd love for them to say, oh man, he was a really bad driver. And he didn't do a really good job with leading the church. And dude, have you seen his math skills? Mathlete? He's awful at math. And he couldn't cook worth a lick. And sometimes he was mean, but he loved Jesus. And that is going to be the mark that people leave. And that is when your funeral comes, when your tombstone, what is your legacy that's going to leave behind? Man, I hope for your sake, for my sake, for God's sake, that people aren't like, yeah, they wore a nice sweater. I want them to say, oh, I don't remember anything about them, but I know they love Jesus and they passed that to me. And, you know, I am here before you because of a great-grandmother named Grace, who my daughter is named after, Alethea Grace, because she left the mark of Jesus in her children who have passed that to me. And I baptized my son on Sunday. Like, that mark is being passed on. And there are people in your lives that have placed the mark of Jesus in you. They have left Him in you, and you have influenced other people. And there are people sitting next to you that you influenced, and God worked in their life because of what Jesus did through you. Stories that honestly, and we were talking about this at our elders meeting a couple of weeks ago. Like, if you had told me 3 years ago about some of you that are here, I would have been like, ain't no way they would ever be in church. Ain't no way they would ever be leading in a ministry like that. Ain't no way. Like, and not because, well, I guess because I am faithless, but you know what I mean? Like, that's what God's all about. He's saying, I'm taking that and I'm going to change it. It's because the mark of Jesus that is left in us that we leave for other people, we're going to be faded away. But Jesus is the one that's going to last. He's the one that's going to refresh and make things right. And we need to understand that. And so that's why Paul is saying to the church in Corinth, look, it's not about me. It's not about Apollos. Was what I did bad? I would think probably not. Is what Apollos did, helping people grow in their faith, in their relationship with Jesus, bad? Absolutely not. But we're not the stars here. It's not about what we've done. We're just the servants. It's about what God has done. And I want to totally encourage you by just knocking you down. It's not about you. It's about what God does through you. It's about what Jesus does through you. The mark you leave for the future is going to be Jesus in you. I don't know if you guys did this. I don't know how things are. I mean, some of you are my age. I'm on the older end of the spectrum here. It's crazy. Pushing 40. But when I was little in like elementary school, especially like kindergarten, I know some of you are older than me too, but I'm trying to be polite. Okay? Some of you are really old. You're like in your 40s. But when I was in elementary school, in kindergarten, first, second grade, we had this thing called ego. And it was a time. We had ego time. I don't know why they called it ego, and I've talked about this before. It was weird. But you would have ego where we would all sit around. What a stupid name. Anyway, like that was mandated by the state of Delaware, the Board of Education. And each day, you would get chosen as the star of the day, or depending on what, you know, sometimes the star of the week. And what that meant is you got to be the line leader. You know, you got to lead, you got to be in the front of the line when you went to the cafeteria, when you went to music class, and you had to be the front of the line. And then during ego time, the star of the day or the star of the week would sit in the middle. We all, every classroom had a rug, because you had to have a rug for ego time. So we all had a rug, and it was usually shag. And we would sit around on this shag rug, and the star of the day would sit in the middle. And the teacher would take out, they had like a special paper or just paper, and each person would go around the room and say what they like about the star of the day. And they would say, you know, like, oh, they're really good at line leading. Or I like the way they wear their belt. And they were always like shallow things. And then there's that girl you liked, you know, in like second grade. You don't like people until you're like 30. It's my daughter. But, you know, if you happen to like someone in second grade, you'd be like, oh, and I like the way your eyes glimmer in the moonlight. I've never seen you outside of math class, but I'm sure they do, you know? Like, it was just this, it was this time we kind of sat around, and I just wonder if we had ego, or at your funeral, what are people going to say about you? And wouldn't it be awesome to be sitting around a room and have everybody say, Jesus. Jesus. Oh, I remember how they loved Jesus. I remember what they did for Jesus. I remember how they weren't perfect, but they knew that Jesus covered their sin. They had marks in their past, and Jesus forgave it. That's what's going to make a difference, is the mark that you want to leave for other people is about Jesus in you. So let me share just a couple of quick things in terms of how we do that. You want to leave a mark? Well, this is going to leave a mark. That will leave a mark. We have one more video next week, and it gets culminates in a lot of fun there. We didn't make those, by the way. But some things, if you want to leave a mark, there's some practical things I want you to do. The first thing you need to do is reframe legacy. And what I mean by reframe, if you think about a frame, you know, a frame is what holds something that is important. It might be a diploma or your college degree, or it might be a family photo or, you know, a recent picture or an old picture. Like, we frame things that we think are important. And I want to encourage you to change what you're framing. Change what you consider when you think about legacy. To think about what what it means to leave a mark. You need to kind of reframe that. We need to decide that, just as Paul was explaining to the church in Corinth, like, it's not about the people. It's about God. And so we need to decide. So things we need to realize is that legacy isn't money. No matter how much you leave behind for your kids, no matter how much you give to other people, your legacy, that will disappear. I guarantee your kids will spend it in a way you never hoped they would, and they'll waste it all because kids are dumb. We're all dumb. You know, but this idea of I want to leave something of greatness, so I'm going to work and work and work and work. And I know I didn't see my family, but I am leaving money for them. Boy, are they going to be glad. I hate to tell you, no, they're not, because it's not going to last. It's going to be wasted. So we need to get rid of this idea that legacy is how much money we leave behind. Or how about an inheritance, kind of the whole picture of our home? Well, I'm working on this house so that when I die, you can have it. Or I'm building this business so that when I'm gone, you have this business to inherit. I'm doing this stuff for you. And the only thing that's going to matter is Jesus. So they're not going to care about the house. They're not going to care about the business. I guarantee it. We've got to change how we see legacy. We've got to change how we see what we leave behind. Because it's not about an inheritance. Or let's get in a little more ethereal. Like, well, I'm leaving for my kids a good work ethic. My kids will know what it means to work a job and to work with their bare hands and to pull themselves up from their own bootstraps. And you know what? That's neat. But that's not going to last. Because Jesus is the only thing that's going to last. Or honor. We're going to make sure that the name of the Fitch household is a name of honor and a name worthy of people saying, oh, you knew the Fitches? Ooh. Most would be like, yes, I did. Ooh. You know, except for their beautiful children. I have to say that. I think you are beautiful. I do. Don't laugh. That's my daughter. She's beautiful. Anyway, totally embarrassed now, too. But anyway, you know what? It's not going to matter what kind of honor, what kind of name we leave. Oh, you are a member of the Smith family. I don't think there's any Smiths here. I don't mean to be. I'm just picking a random name. Smith Johnson. It's hyphenated. You know, we're a member of the Smith Johnson family, and our name will be known as a name in the community. Like, don't spend time investing in something like that that isn't going to last. Or skills. I'm going to teach my kids. They're going to know how to recalibrate a carburetor and remove the piston rod and transmogrify it so that it works with a 30-30. Which I think that's a gun thing, isn't it? Yeah, see, I don't know that either. I'm going to teach my kids how to hunt. They're going to know how to hunt. I'm not going to teach my kids that. Sorry. I mean, not because I don't want to, just because, like, I could teach them, but they're not going to know how to do it when I'm done. Maybe they're like, okay, what did he do? Do the opposite. But you know, this idea of what are we going to leave behind, these skills, or this idea of well-roundedness. I'm going to make sure my kids are well-rounded. I'm going to make sure that the people around me know how well-rounded of a person I am. Not only do I know math, but I know the arts. I can play an instrument. And I'm a brilliant engineer and can do design things, and I can pick color palettes and put them together because I'm a masterful color paletter. Like, stop worrying about all that stuff. We need to reframe what it means to leave a legacy, to make your mark, and making your mark is Jesus. The second thing we need to do is refocus spiritually. Okay, if you get, yeah, you know what, it's not about the stuff, it's not about the inheritance, it's not about the skills. Once we get that idea and know that it's not about us, then you need to refocus spiritually. Where are you? Because if there is no Jesus in you, you've got no Jesus to leave. If Jesus isn't, and well, as Paul said to the church in Corinth, you're not even being led by the Spirit. God isn't leading you. You're doing it your own way. You're fleshly, you're worldly. So one, if you haven't trusted Jesus as your Savior, you've got nothing to offer. If you have not made that decision to be a follower of Jesus, a Christ follower, believing in his death on the cross to take away your sin, you got nothing. Sorry. And that's the way it is. And if you have made that decision, are you living that way? Is there enough Jesus coming out of you? Are you like one of those nasty jelly bellies that you pop in thinking it's going to be a mint flavor and it's vomit flavor? You got the mint, but it smells like vomit. What are you offering? We need to refocus spiritually. And you know, Jesus, well, we talked about it earlier, the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. If you want to leave Jesus, focus on loving him with everything you've got. And then there will be something to last. There will be that mark. There will be that fresh taste that will last beyond them. So you need to grow in your relationship with Jesus. The big church word, and we each week of this series we've been looking at a big theological word, and I said this a little bit earlier, but today's big theological word, and theological means having to do with God, today's big theological word is sanctification. Sanctification. And if you grew up in church, you may have never heard that word, which is fine. If you didn't grow up in church, you may probably have never heard that word, and if you hear that word beyond today, neat. But I just kind of want to give you a little background with some of these big words that get thrown around sometimes in church world. And sanctification basically is the process where God makes us more and more and more and more and more like Jesus. It literally means to be sanctified, means to be made holy, to be set apart. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 talks about this. He says, and that, he was talking about the sin, the problems that people had, and there are all these issues that they were dealing with. He says, and that's what some of you were. But you were washed. You have been made clean. You were sanctified. You're being made holy. You were justified, which is what we talked about last week. You were marked as righteous in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. So the idea of being sanctified, that's the next step when it comes to refocusing spiritually, is that we need to become more like Jesus. Let God work through you. If you want to leave a mark that's going to last, you need to refocus spiritually. Hey, the color changes here. Well, come on right there. there. Refocus spiritually. And the other thing, too, with this idea of refocusing is, you know, be intentional when it comes to leaving this mark. Like, it's one thing to grow, and it's good. You have to. You have to have the foundation. You have to be a follower of Jesus. You have to be growing in Him if you want to leave Him for other people, if you want that fresh taste to last. But sometimes we need to be intentional about it, too. You know, we have these interactions, we have these conversations, we have these moments where we can talk about football, or we could talk about Jesus. And I'm not saying shove it in there and cram it in, and we'll talk about this next month in our Christianophobia series. I'm not talking about, like, if you love Jesus, click like, and if you don't, you're going to hell. Like, yeah, that's helping people. So I just, you know, not that I'm busting, just seriously. But when you have the opportunity, when God opens these doors for you to talk about Jesus, when someone with bad breath comes to you, give them a breath mint. Give them Jesus. Don't just give them like a chicken finger. Chicken fingers are good, but they're not going to get people. They're not going to refresh someone's breath. So just be intentional about that. Be intentional when you refocus spiritually, when you think about, you know, your relationship with other people, your relationship with your neighbors. How do people know you? Do they know you as one who loves Jesus, or do they know you as, oh yeah, that's that person that's always backbiting and talking about other people? Oh, they're that person that when they're asked to do a job, if the boss is around, they do it. But when the boss is gone, they don't. That's leaving a mark. But it's not one that's going to last. It's not Jesus. So refocus spiritually. And the third thing that we all have to do, this is all of us, this is all of these three things are all of us, but that is to review constantly. To say, okay, where am I? Am I leaving Jesus? Okay, where am I? Am I leaving Jesus? Is Jesus coming out of me? Because it's easy to drift. And, you know, we're assuming that that's what happened to the church in Corinth, because Paul planted the church, Apollos came in, they were growing, and at some point they lost their way and it made it about people. And Paul says, no, it's about God. So we need to get a letter from Paul. We need to get that idea of, you know, where are we? Review, where am I? Am I living for Jesus? What do people see through me? Are they seeing Jesus, or are they seeing how cool I am? Are they seeing Jesus, or are they seeing how impressive I am with my whatever? Are they seeing Jesus, or are they seeing how obnoxious I am, or how catty I am, or backstabbing I am? So we need to keep looking and checking ourselves to see, okay, am I leaving Jesus? Am I leaving Jesus? And honestly, I mean, that's not like once a year. Like, we talk about New Year's Eve, New Year's resolutions and stuff like that. And somebody, I don't know if it was one of you guys, posted there was a picture that was like December 31st, I think it was, and it said, it was an empty parking lot, and it said the health club today. And then it said the health club tomorrow, and it's a packed parking lot. Because this idea of New Year resolutions, and we want to, okay, we need to get things together and review, and are we doing what we want to do? I want to encourage you to have a new day resolution. Like a new hour resolution. Are we leaving Jesus? Are we leaving Jesus? Because that's the only thing that's going to last. The mark you leave for the future will be Jesus in you. If you want to make a difference, if you want to impact the world, step out of the way and let Jesus be the one that is left. Be the breath mint that dissolves, and all that's gone, all that's remaining is the refreshness of Jesus. The mark you leave for the future will be Jesus in you. Let's pray. God, we are here as people that have, as we talked about the first week, we have tons of marks. We have tons of imperfections. We fail. I fail. I need to review, like, moment by moment, minute by minute, because I fall away so quickly. But I pray that you would help us to get this idea, to understand the concept that what we do, what we leave behind, if it's money, if it's legacy, if it's stuff, if it's our name, if it's our pride or our history, like, none of that is going to last. The only thing that's going to last is you living through us. And so I pray that you would help us to continually to reframe what we consider legacy, and that we would review our lives, refocus spiritually, and come to the point where we are more and more like Jesus, that we are letting you sanctify us. We are letting you grow in us so that there's more of you to leave behind for other people. And I pray that when it comes down to it at the end, it's not about Sean Fitch. It's not about any person in this room, but it's about what Jesus has done. And that the name Jesus is what rolls off people's lips when they think about us. We pray this in your name. Amen.